You were also an immigration lawyer.
Well, the immigration, as I say, mostly because of the languages and mostly because of the Italian, but that, yeah, that was one of my specialties. And I had a lot of, I mean, one of the things I developed in the practice was the habeas corpus writ, using it to keep people from being deported at the last minute. See, the general immigration in terms of law is mostly administrative law, the workings of the Immigration Service, part of the Department of Justice. But before the most recent statutes, certainly up to including the 1965 amendments, which were liberalizing amendments, which are opened up more immigration. But you had this system where somebody who is here without the necessary papers, I mean, and they usually were tourists who got in legally, but then they overstayed their stay. They have a right to a hearing, American constitutional guarantees, and the hearing is before an immigration judge who's part of the Immigration Service, but not part of the enforcing service of the immigration. And then from the immigration judge is an appeal to the Board of Appeals in Washington. That's the legal system. So one of the things that happens with that practice is that the astute, experienced practitioner can use it to delay departure from these shores. In the meantime, maybe you figure out, you make it long enough, you can find some other way of keeping the person here. That was really what most of the immigration practice was. It's not the kind of law that makes big black letter headlines about the rights of people. It really is more than nibbling at the edges of the law, but it puts practical results to keep people here. Mm-hmm. And all kinds of, some of the more interesting moments. I remember a Haitian cook on one of the pretty posh, he may have been down the scale, he may not have been the top chef or anything, in one of the posh Greenwich restaurants, catering to the rich and famous of Greenwich. He was arrested by the immigration authorities because he had overstayed if they couldn't make bond. Well, no, they take him there anyway. They take him to Hartford, which was their headquarters. Then they keep him, if they couldn't make bond, in the jail in Hartford, the old jail, the old county jail. They had an arrangement with the state where they could use those state facilities in Hartford. And one of the relatives of this man came to see me. He wanted me to represent him, so I went up to the jail and this Haitian, and they're over dramatic, he kneels on the floor. He tells me in French, "You are my savior," because I was going to get him out. That kind of, and you had a lot of that, These people, of course, facing authority and coming out of Haiti, which at that time had the Macron, what's the Copon Macru. This secret police, and one of the people told me in French that to say good morning in Haiti is the form of being political. Dieu bonjour, c'est le fait de la politique, because of the macroute, because of the secret police. So that they came from that, and they come to this country, and then the immigration inspectors themselves have the worst kind of characteristics of the police. I mean, autocratic, arrogant. Of course, they may not be aware they are, but they mean, you're here illegally, not boom. But the law had said that people, any person in the United States who entered legally has a right to the protection of the Constitution. Therefore, you got due process. You know, they just like often the police don't remember that either, because again, and so that they create fear in these subjects. You know, this is a strange land. The English, if it exists at all, is very poor. So they're scared. And to see an authority figure who seems able, who does help them or seems able to help them, suddenly, you know, he becomes, you know, Jesus Christ in reincarnated form. But, and I had a lot of those. This is when I developed the use of the writ of the habeas corpus, you know, that by what right do you hold this man? And that once you bring a writ, then they have to free him, and then they have to argue it afterwards, you know. But I was helped there because Zampano, and I imagine the fact that we were both coming out of the Italian minority experience, you know, he always used to grant me those writs because I'd go to New Haven, the federal court for him. And that was part of the immigration practice. Interestingly, Newman, who also should have come out of an immigrant experience, but he was much more interested in having them great legal debates. I mean, it's being spend an hour discussing the law, but because the law didn't fit, no writ, says Newman. You know, but Zampano always gave it a writ. You know. That was part of the immigration practice. And you usually, well, one of the things that happened with it, you force people into overly authoritarian behavior on the part of the state, and you get methods of evasion. One of the great methods of evasion would be the fake marriage. Well, the real marriage, but never carried out. I mean, marry a U.S. citizen. One of the people involved in that was a cleric who came, it was a Catholic priest out of Haiti. And he worked in a parish in Brooklyn, and he would come to Stanford in the main church in the center of Stanford. They had a mission for Haitians, Haitian Catholic. And he'd come and preach on Sunday the mass at that. But he also had a racket. He had New York blacks who would marry, you know, Haitians. And then they'd apply as spouses of U.S. citizens to have their status in the country adjusted to a legal status. An interesting case I had. First, and there were many women, Haitians, who were domestics in the Greenwich homes. And they'd be coming to this parish, I mean to this mission. I got one of my clients worked in a Greenwich house as a domestic. She paid money she came in through Canada, first of all, because of the French, the Quebec, they talk French. And she came in, and then she landed a job here, and she paid money to this priest. That the way that they handled, I mean, they put money in an envelope, the collection plate, that was for him. And that, they didn't hand it to him, so, I mean, they always went in, so there was a marriage with a black man who was a school teacher in the New York public school system. And of course they married, and that was the last they saw of each other. But they established an address. All the papers were at this address. And what usually happens, they don't have enough staff really to ferret these things out. Somebody gets angry and squeals, and then you get the, mm-hmm. that's how these cases. Oh, so my woman was hauled down to New York to the Immigration Service in New York. I remember this because they were building, you know, the Twin Towers down there at the time. Mm-hmm. And my car was in a parking lot near there, and something fell off, and it missed my car. I saw from the window I was in the. They wanted to interview her. I mean, what did you have to eat in the morning? Did you cook breakfast? You know, this. And obviously the answers didn't jive with the answers that the so-called husband had given them earlier. Mm-hmm. And that was a trick that they always use. And so they were going to deport, but they wanted cooperation because they wanted to get at this priest. And I said, well, you know, at this point I advised her not to answer any more questions. And then I said, well, you want to, I'm sure that if you have something there, you want to ask questions about the priest, but first we want some promises here. I mean, are you going to forego deportation? Oh, no, well then, goodbye. But that priest was eventually he escaped to Haiti and built himself a nice home, and he's in Haiti with his, these practices, both the labor and the immigration practices, gave me a heck of a lot of spice. I don't know whether they were a major part of my income necessarily, but they sure as hell made life as a lawyer more interesting. Negligence cases, automobile accident cases, and title searches and that kind of thing with land transactions.